Hi, everyone, and welcome to Folk Fest Friday here on a Juno afternoon, this Friday afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And today we're going to be joined by a number of folks, some of them Folk Festers as well. John Hatton's going to be here. He's going to tell us about the state of CD sales here at the Folk Fest and also across America. Mark Whitman will be here to explain the benefits of the moral compass. Annie Bartholomew is going to be here to preview Friday night's KXLL Folk Fest Showcase. We're going to meet Folk Fest's guest artists, Jason and Ferris Romero. And Paul Douglas and Mark Pusich will be here. They're both trustees of the Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund. They're going to tell us about applying for grants. It's all coming up after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal librarians were among those advocating in Washington, D.C. this week for legislation to close the digital divide in rural tribal communities. The event Thursday was organized by New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich, who touts a tribal program in his state as a possible model for tribes elsewhere. Cynthia Aguilar is a librarian for New Mexico's Santo Domingo Pueblo. She said the current limited broadband makes it hard for Pueblo residents and employees to accomplish simple tasks related to education or economic opportunities.
If we have a grant that needs to be submitted, we started at 2 in the afternoon, and by 5, it's still spinning and spinning and spinning, and then we leave for the night, we leave it on, we come back, and it's still doing the same thing. And so those grant opportunities go by the wayside because we missed our deadline.
Santo Domingo partnered with the neighboring San Felipe, Cochiti, and Santa Ana Pueblos to combine their demand for better internet. That's how they were able to get nearly $4 million from E-Rate, a decades-old federal program, to start building broadband network. Senator Heinrich hopes to better utilize that program to be more equitable for tribes throughout the U.S.
Although over 90% of public libraries throughout the nation as a whole have received these FCC funds through the program to support improved internet access, the National Congress of American Indians estimates that only 15% of tribal libraries have received any of this critical funding. That is a huge disparity.
Heinrich, a Democrat, and Dean Heller, a Republican senator from Nevada, are both pushing the bill that would help tribes access E-rate funds. Senator Tina Smith, a Democrat from Minnesota, said this week she also plans to introduce legislation to support rural and tribal broadband projects by tapping into USDA funding. The California Coastal Commission held its first public hearing this week on what tribal members called a long overdue policy to consult Native American tribes on coastal planning matters. Among the tribal members who spoke Wednesday was Maura Sullivan, testifying on behalf of the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation.
As Chumash people, we have some of the most expensive and sought-after coastline, but it is our heritage and territory, and we don't use it just for fishing and gathering, but also for prayer. The ocean is our first mother. That is why this tribal consultation policy is so important. As a Chumash woman, I feel acknowledged. I feel seen in a world that has tried to invisibilize us.
California has 109 federally recognized and 55 state recognized tribes. The Coastal Commission was supposed to develop their tribal consultation policy after a governor's order in 2011. It's expected to formally adopt the policy this summer. The Gila River Indian community is remembering prominent tribal attorney and legal scholar Rodney Lewis this week. AZ Central reports Lewis died Tuesday at the age of 77. He's known for negotiating a legal victory for the Gila River community in 2004 as part of the largest tribal water settlement in U.S. history. The Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians will consider regulating the use of culturally important words for commercial purposes. The Smoky Mountain News reports that decision comes after a heated debate over names used by the Seven Clans Brewery, started by two Eastern Cherokee women. Tribal members who oppose the brewery's naming choices say it's offensive to tie culturally important symbols to alcohol, a substance with a harmful and controversial legacy in Cherokee society. The brewery owners argue that idea is outdated and say they only meant to honor their culture. As Seven Clans Brewery is a private business, not on tribal land, it's unclear what effect future regulations could have on its operation. For National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Get your tickets now for the 2018 Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. This year promises to electrify with performances from Andrew Junior Boy Jones Band, the Eroica Trio, Doug Deming and the Jewel Tones, and a festival finale not to be missed with Rhonda Roth and Rodney Kendrick. Tickets are available at all of the usual outlets and online at jazzandclassics.org. This message brought to you by Juno Jazz and Classics.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host for today, joined by John Hatton. John, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, it's a great time of year to be in Juno.
Yeah, and this is a time that you're at a lot of different communities in across the country when you're going and following different festivals that are happening. So for us, this is our Folk Fest
That's
week.
That's right.
And for other places that you visit, that's their week of having great music they're listening to. So tell me a little bit about some of your background. You were telling me that you kind of started off getting interested in this by really going to the source of learning from people about kind of old-time music.
Right. That was the traveling part of it. The whole festival part came when I was in public school and living in the D.C. area. And I'd go to the Festival of American Folklife and the National Folk Festival, which at the time was at Wolf Trap Park, and becoming a volunteer and everything else and watching how those festivals worked with traditional artists. And then being on the road, going to festivals outside of that, and going to different performers and going to their homes, these what we would call our mentors, and sitting at their knees and learning tunes and living in their front yards or in our cars or whatever, and taking our little Walkman cassette tape recorders at the time and collecting whatever music we had. We were all, in a way, non-bona fide ethnomusicologists.
Sure, but really going to the source, right, recording it, and then having other people be able to hear that and learn from it and kind of perpetuate out and build on that whole music genre that's so much a part of kind of the American fabric of what folk music is today.
Right, and there were small labels like County Records, like Bay Records, Arhuli Records, Voyager Records.
Yeah.
Those are our West Coast labels, and then we had Rounder, which absorbed a bunch of labels. It became a major or a small major, we would call it, in the record business. And then we had Shanaki Yazoo. So we had all different flavors of music that were represented by these smaller labels, if you will.
So as you were saying, you were kind of using the term that I guess we still use today of taped, right?
Right.
So that was using literally developing tapes. Were you using cassette tapes or reel-to-reel?
Mostly cassette tapes.
Right.
In the days of the 60s, reel-to-reels were still around,
mm-hmm,
at the folk clubs and things like that. When I first went to Michigan, the folk club there was using reel-to-reel recorders.
Quarter-inch tape,
And I had a pair of, I had a pair of tape recorders that I used. They had just come out with a dual cassette deck.
Okay.
And mine were singles, and I can't remember the name of them, but they were based upon the old, this is what happens when you turn 40, and I'm well beyond that.
That's right. I remember 40.
Those, anyway.
But they're the basic
so these
kind of building blocks of what people know of as cassette tapes.
Right,
and
but
those
these
kind
were
of recording.
Nice machines.
Yeah, level ones.
One of mine still works, the other one only plays.
I know, like, Marantz were big, and TX were a big one,
right.
Otaris were big as far as, and those
Harman
were.
Harman Kardon, that I had.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like good midline machines.
Yeah.
They weren't the Nakamichis. They weren't the the other one that's really big that, you know, that the field recorders used to carry around.
Sure, yeah. So you kind of went, you were taping these, and then what'd you do? Then you went to festivals, and you actually went and kind of had a table set up where you were sort of showing,
we would take our tapes and we would pass them around or make copies and send them off to each other and things like that. And this was all traditional music, as we collected it and, you know, singing, playing, whatever, or stories. And mm-hmm. that was all fun. And some of this stuff actually got turned into formal recordings through the record companies. There were, you know, like, what was it? County Records, which was started with Dave Freeman and Charlie Ferreau. Charlie's gone now, but before he passed, he had Blue Dog Records, or Old Blue Records, excuse me. And it was a thing where he had a recording that another friend of mine made of playing on Kyle's front porch. And it was a beginning banjo lesson for Clawhammer Banjo. And this actually became a recording. Mm. And it was something that's still sold today.
Building block of that Clawhammer style.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
Some of the styles that were presented by the old timers, as I can call them now, were put out in the Clawhammer Banjo recordings of 1, 2, and 3. Heritage Records also put out one called Banjo Classics. They were only on cassette. They never made it past the cassette format. So this is the fun part of taking this stuff out then from festival to festival.
Yeah.
So I need to do that and have a centralized place to do that.
So what are some of the hallmarks of how that has evolved and changed over the years? You were originally started with, I think, probably a table of cassettes, right, when you were...
Cassettes and LPs.
Then it must have moved to CDs.
It moved to CDs. Somewhere along the way, I picked up a few 8-tracks when I was down in Texas because...
Yeah.
Everybody's Cadillac still had 8-tracks, so we sold a few different things down there. Those are mostly gone.
Yeah.
I still have a number of LPs left, and the CD market came in after cassettes. But yet I still have at least 2 full tables at every festival of cassettes and sell, you know, a few hundred of those at every the bigger festivals, and those are fun.
And then how is the electronic music, how is the, you know, the format now changing to MP3s and things like that and memory sticks and all that kind of stuff? Has that come into play, or is that something that kind of, in a way, is a hard thing to kind of merchandise?
Well, I don't tend to deal with that because the first problem is there's no liner notes.
Yeah.
And people say, well, you can always go to a website. Well, that means you have to be versed in how to do all these things. And the days of pawing through records is missed when you get on the Internet. You know, when you scroll down through something, it's not the same. You can't pick something up and actually just turn it over and look at it. You know, nowadays you have to click on this button for this, that button for that, and then make the page bigger so you can see it. And as your eyes get weaker, you know, you need bigger screens.
Yeah.
And everything's become smaller. And so now you can, you know, fit thousands of tunes on something about the size of a fingernail.
Yeah.
And, you know, those used to be science fiction books that when I went to college, you know, so.
Right. So have you felt, but it seems like this is still, the Folk Fest is still a pocket where people want that tangible object. They want to be able to look at it.
That's true. And we do sell a lot of the non-guest artist performers here, as well as the guest artist performers. And so there's a lot of things that are out there. As I always tell the artists, they're going to sell over 90% of their product. And so don't leave a lot with me. But at the festival, you know, I'm the central showcase for them, or at least for dispensing their product to the public. So they come to me and say, how many am I going to sell? And, you know, usually 20 CDs is good to start with and see what happens.
Where are you located when people right now are going to the Folk Fest and want to find you and want to find
some
of this?
I'm in Centennial Hall in the Governor's Room area. So you'll see all that. But there's 2 lobbies there, so it's a short walk from one to the other. So
do you have an estimate about how many artists' stuff you have for sale right now?
Here, I would say probably less than 10% of the performing artists bring product with them and sell there at the table. The guest artists, of course, their stuff is now being sold through the festival table.
And that just kind of changes depending on what festival and how they run it.
Yeah,
that
every
kind of
festival
thing.
Is
yeah.
different.
Right.
I mean, I can take care of everybody's stuff, or I can take care of certain people's stuff.
You yeah. know,
how, depending on how they want to run it.
Right.
So.
Is there a bit of a moment here where you feel like, boy, you hope that people still kind of get that tangible item? You know, it seems like it's, you know, everyone's got an iPhone, everyone's got that, everyone's
right.
got that digital device, and that's the way they, you know, we're listening to music, it seems like.
Well, with the demise of the actual CD and everything else, follows a lot of other things. It hits the printing press, it hits the production studio where they actually press the records. It hits the artists who used to do the cover art. It hits the people who yeah. you know used to proofread the CD liner notes and things like that, as well as the media transportation companies that are like the post office.
Right.
Now we have to do everything with the click of a button. Over the airwaves, and there's we like the airwaves.
Sure, but yeah, yeah. Well, that's fascinating to talk to you about this. It's just kind of the way that the festival environment has changed, but also in a lot of ways the way it stays the same for many, many years now. It's really kind of a holdout for that item, that
yes.
souvenir to bring home, remembering
right.
hearing that artist, that
it's
sort of thing.
It's always good, especially at the Alaska Folk Festival, it's always great to come and support the artists that come here and buy their products.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
The money goes to them, so that's the good thing.
Cool.
I mean, we don't take, we don't make them feel like musicians and take 90% and leave them with 10%. But, we try and make it equitable for everybody
that's
so that
right.
all the costs are covered.
Well, John, thanks so much. John Hatton selling CDs right now over in the Folk Fest at Centennial Hall as you listen to some of the great music. Even if you're just listening to it on KRNN and not there in person, make sure you get down to Centennial Hall and as you say, support some of the artists that are playing this great music.
Great.
John, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about this.
Very
You're cool
very
to,
welcome.
Very
it's
cool to hear
fun
about
to be
it.
Here.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks so much. Music from the featured artist, Ferris and Jason Romero. We're going to be talking to them later in this show, but right now, Mark Whitman has joined me. And Mark, you've brought a very, I don't want to say intimidating, it seems like a little bit of an intimidating...
No, Andy, it's a moral compass.
Okay, this is a...
A rare instrument in the environment in which we live. It's a wooden box you see here.
It seems ancient.
But...
Is
Let's
it?
Not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay, all right.
No.
All right, let's talk
I'm
about this.
I'm here to advocate for the 7th Annual Lyres and Fiddlers Consort, which will be at T.K. McGuire's, right here behind K2 in the Prospector, from 1 to 4 this Saturday. All right?
Okay.
So for those who are gifted in the art of factual flexibility, not a lie, but the truth deferred, come and share your gift with us. Share your craft. I mean... The art of verbal persuasion.
Tell me that phrase again. What is not a lie, but
not
the truth
a lie.
Deferred? What is that? What was the phrase you said? Is not a lie, but the truth deferred?
Well, if I have to explain it, Andy,
that's
like being an interpreter for a bad mind.
My compass is spinning here.
Once a year, those gifted with a silver tongue come and share their well-polished craft. And tall tales and prevarications, they're a refreshing discovery in this world, sterile world we inhabit of abbreviated tweets and Twitters.
Yes.
These are crafted, polished stories that are shared with people. And I thought, well, it's not just telling stories. You can be a spectator as well. you know, you can come and watch. Like Chauncey the Gardener and being there said, I like to watch.
Yes.
Yes, you have a role to play too.
I feel like I could inhabit that role.
Yes, but what better way to demonstrate what we do than bringing in
the actual moral compass?
Well, this is the moral compass.
Here. Is this the one and only? Are there many of these?
Well, no, this is a rare, delicate spiritual instrument.
This. I'm going to stand up and look at this.
Come over.
Okay. All right, so we've got the moral compass here. Okay.
So
I'll move this out of the way.
If you use this here today, it will show a path that you can take in life.
My goodness.
That is direct and clear and moral for you. It's a priceless, sensitive instrument. You can come closer. It won't bite you.
All right. I'm a little hesitant, I'll admit. Right. I don't know what I'm looking at here.
I'm going to come over. It's unduly influenced by any monetary form, anything of value that you have on your person. So I need you to remove all money, coins, and bills.
I've just got credit cards.
That's everything. That's the last point. That's good, too.
All right.
I detect a gleam of gold in the back of your mouth. Is that a molar?
It is.
Don't worry. We'll get it back in
that
there.
That seems like that's going to get hard to be
that's
put back.
That's all right.
All right.
It's a little momentary pain for clear spiritual direction. Now place your left hand on this side, the right here.
Watch.
Do you see how the needle's moving?
Yes.
It's swinging.
Spinning wildly.
Definite southern influence.
Should I be controlling my thoughts in
northern
any way?
Northern exposure. There it is. It's pointing directly to T.K. Maguire's over there at the prospector.
That seems like a setup. Wait a minute.
No.
You knew that was going to happen.
No. I
don't know what I was thinking of then. Is that affected, or is it just reading?
No, this is a soulful, deeper
thing than just what I'm thinking of at the moment.
Money influences our whole world. Now, I put your belongings in a safe location if I can just find them.
Okay.
Try and get them back.
We'll see how that... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who will be there? I'm really glad you asked that question, Andy.
I'm wondering.
If you didn't ask it, I know you thought it.
I was thinking that. You were absolutely correct.
Of course.
Who is going to be there?
Well, Dr. Bob Bankhart.
Oh, my goodness.
He has taken a brief respite from his momentary flirtation with world fame in Washington, D.C. to share a story and a fiddle tune with us.
Well, that compass is going to be spinning.
Well, Dr. Bankhart, he has the unique ability to tell a story and accompany himself on the fiddle at the same time.
Okay.
This would be referred to as playing with yourself in public, but I would never say that.
No, that's not.
That's open to
gross. That was not
gross,
something that was said.
Gross.
No.
Misinterpretation.
Certainly not.
And besides, you know, Bob has this psychokinetic effect. The last time he approached the moral compass, the needle turned into a corkscrew, which can only be used to open wine bottles.
How did you repair that?
Well, he uses it to open Cabernet.
Very good. But an entire rehaul of an overhaul of the moral compass was required.
The Baron of Baklava, the Prince of the original Paradise Cafe, Buzz Ritter. He has promised to join us and share a tale from the patriarch of his family. And then, unfortunately, Brett.
Brett
Dillingham will be there, and that's definitely why we can't bring the moral compass.
Right, you can actually hear it whirring there when you...
Well, the last time he approached within 10 feet, you see where the glass is...
A little nicked,
fused and melted there, and that needle bent beyond repair,
That was trouble.
Yes.
Yeah, you should have known better. let him get in the same room.
We did.
So my goodness.
This is a one-time opportunity for you, Andy.
Okay.
The moral compass.
Very good.
Okay, I appreciate it. I apologize about the removal of your molar.
It's just in the back there.
I promise that we will have it replaced as soon as I sell the gold to finance your dental appointment.
Very good.
All right?
Thank you.
Follow the way pointed out.
Like it only makes sense. Yeah.
Straight is the path. Twisted is the way to T.K. Maguire's
7th Annual Liars and Fiddlers
Consort. 1-4.
Yes,
thank
very
you,
good.
Sir.
Happening Saturday, 1-4, T.K. Maguire's. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Andy.
I'm not sure whether to thank you on
I was afraid you were going to decline the invitation.
Well, I'm just in a state of recline right now. All right, we're going to be hitting a few more guests here coming up. Mark, thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you, Andy.
Appreciate it. All happening at TK McGuire's tomorrow from 1 to 4.
Visiting friends and family this summer? Find out how to keep them busy by attending the annual travel fair Saturday, April 21st from noon to 4 at the Jack. Bring the family to this free event sponsored by Travel Juneau and Alaska Airlines. You'll find locals discounts, giveaways, food trucks, and chances to win round-trip tickets on Alaska Airlines. For more info, go to TravelJuneau.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. See you at the travel fair April 21st from noon to 4 at the Jack. This message brought to you by Travel Juneau.
So recovering from that last gosh, there, I took them all out, but that's all right. I'm gonna be fine here with Annie Bartholomew. Annie,
just
jumped over from a couple of studios down the hallway from KXLL, and you've got a busy folk festival going on.
Oh my gosh!
Did you already play it?
I didn't play the festival proper, but I did do a showcase with Taylor Vittick together at the Gold Town Nick.
Very cool.
And a house party, and
I was at the house party last night. That was super fun.
Do you have any
more things where you have to play?
I don't know.
You don't know.
My guitarist from Fairbanks is coming to town.
Somebody has a stage somewhere. Maybe.
I'm sure I'll say yes.
But you're also organizing this KXL Folk Fest showcase. So tell me about what's
going
on
there.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Well, we're at the Hangar on the Wharf, Hangar Ballroom this year. We had this idea after going to South by Southwest, doing a showcase that not only honors the folk music in this community, but some of the stuff we play on KXLL, some electronic music, real funky stuff.
I'm behind that. I love it. The diversity of music that's happening on KXLL, yeah.
Very cool. And then show some of the performers who come to our town what is uniquely Juneau, and then reprise some of the acts you've seen on the main stage. So we've got Queens again for year two. Super excited about, I don't know, they got a standing ovation.
Oh, yeah, they got a Beyonce song. Powerful sound, and just awesome to hear these different treatments of contemporary music. It's really fun. They're really
so
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got Alaska Music One on sound, who's sponsoring the event, and
they kill
it every single year.
Keith,
But yeah.
And then Hangar the Wharf, you doing something with Hangar, or are they just kind of helping sponsor the event?
Yeah, there are gracious sponsors who donated the space and are helping pay the artists, so couldn't get any better partner here in the community. This is year two working with them, so we're just really excited to put this larger-than-life showcase together.
How many acts all together?
We've got six acts this year.
six acts in a half hour.
No, yeah, exactly. Like 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours, six acts. Sure.
It starts at 8 o'clock. We're doing music right at 8 o'clock.
And our final act
is at 10 o'clock because we want people to go out and enjoy everything else happening downtown.
Yeah.
You really can't go wrong during Folk Fest. This one's a free event, so you're welcome to come and leave and come back if you want to.
Right.
But earlier in the night, we're going to have our quieter acts. And something I'm super excited about, Christy Nami Erickson is going to be doing some new poems she's been working on with Avery Stewart. So couldn't get any better than that.
That's very cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Music and poetry together.
Yeah, and just really kind of showcasing all these different artistic endeavors that are happening in Juneau all the time. What a great time to do it, right? During Folk Fest.
Yeah,
everyone's
right?
Here. Everyone's ready. Spring has sprung. It's beautiful out.
Gorgeous.
It's all happening.
We couldn't get luckier.
It's exciting. Anything else you want to mention about it?
Like I said, kicks off at 8 o'clock. Our headliners this year are the Amish Robots. They're kind of Southeast Alaska connected supergroup.
Patrick Troll,
one of our DJs, is in there. Alex Nelson. Their harmonies are killer. You have to come see them. Clay Good is on drums.
And is Alex playing guitar?
He's playing a real mean guitar.
Well, no kidding.
We've got a
he
video of
does.
Them sound checking downstairs from yesterday on the KXL page. Check it out. They're just, like, silly talented.
Yeah.
And they're from here, so.
Yeah, originally. But, like, Alex is, like, also, like, a physicist or something.
Yeah, whatever.
I know.
So it's going to be a math geek to me.
Whatevs.
Other acts really excited about Indian Agent. That's Nick Lannon. He's been in Silver Jackson. This is his latest project. He's going to be up there doing some electronic tunes. He's working on the totem pole at Harborview Elementary School.
Yeah.
So we're really lucky to have him in town. Avery Stewart, who has an album coming out next month, is going to be there with his full band.
And he was playing First Friday a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
right?
He was playing here last Friday.
Yeah.
We're giving him a run for his money. And Taylor Vidic and Cody Russell, new duo together, are going to be duetting, kicking off the night at 8 o'clock.
Got to hear a little of Taylor singing last night at that house party that was just so fun. And, God, she's just got some pipes. It's awesome, right?
I just can't believe these people live here in Juneau or from Juneau.
Like, you've been buddies with them your whole life.
Yeah, I can't.
And then they're crazy talented.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Crazy talented.
What happened to me?
There's
why
something
didn't I get
about
to?
This place. And I think a lot of it has to do with growing up with this cool folk festival.
Yeah.
That gets everybody on stage and... That is the force that kind of drives the art in our community. So just so grateful to the Folk Fest Board for putting this thing on every year that brings so many cool people to our town.
Well, thanks for doing that with KXLL as well and always pushing the envelope with that stuff. And like, it's just awesome to see you kind of, you know, take the Folk Fest thing and then also say, what else can we mix in? Let's put in some poetry. Let's put in some other stuff. Let's put in some newer music. That's really cool. I love it.
Well, I just feel very lucky to be here. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Andy.
Yeah, sure. All right, Annie. Well, have a great Fest showcase that's happening tonight. Starts at 8 o'clock, and the music's going to be jam-packed all the way through, so get there at 8 if you want to see it all. Obviously, it's a fun place. You can also have a beer.
Yeah, it is 21 and over.
Right, 21 and over event. Brought to you by Hanging on the Wharf and Alaska Music One, always doing amazing sound and always contributing.
Yeah, we could not do this without them. This would not be possible.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know this, but Keith is doing a lot of shows all over town, almost every bar. Betsy is working just as hard.
Yeah,
so.
They're the hardest working men and women in show business. So
they are.
Absolutely. All right, thanks so much, Annie.
Thanks so much,
Annie. Great talking to you, and have a great show tonight. All right. Well, it's always a fun time here in Juneau when we get to bring amazing guest artists into town and into the studio. Jason and Ferris Romero is here. Josh Raby also is here. Or did I get your last name right? Raby.
Yeah,
sorry.
No worries.
I have a good friend whose last name is Raby, so that's how I messed it up. But anyway, thanks to all you guys for coming. They're tuning up because they're going to play some music for us. But maybe I can just talk to you guys. Tell me about where you're from, how you got involved in kind of this type of music, that sort of thing. I know it's a big old questions, but let's start with where are you from?
These days, I'm from Northern California, but we live in Horsefly, British Columbia.
Okay.
So it's about a third of the way up the province, kind of right in the middle, next to the Caribou Mountain Range.
Okay, very nice. How'd you end up in that neck of the woods?
Ferris, my wife here, is fifth generation Horsefly.
Oh, well, all right.
I know.
Not many people can say that.
I wear that as a badge.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah.
There's lakes and rivers, with her family name. It's
yeah,
pretty great.
That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah. How did you meet?
We met through a mutual friend who had one of Jason's banjos. We build banjos when we're not on the road playing music.
Okay.
And that's pretty much, banjos are the totally responsible for Jason and I being together at all, which is pretty amazing.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, and a mutual friend who had one of his banjos, and I knew him, he kind of talked us up to each other for about a year before we met. He's our matchmaker.
Okay.
And then Jason used to come up to BC fly fishing every year, and he took a large detour to come and meet me on Vancouver Island where I was living, and showed up at an old-time fiddle jam I was hanging out at that evening.
Okay.
And
we were married 3 months later.
Yeah, and married 3 months later.
One thing led to another.
Right. I was not pregnant.
Yeah. That was not my next question.
No, okay. I can see it in your eyes, man.
Well, that's awesome. And Josh, how did you meet up with these folks?
I was on their, they did this record. They went around and grabbed a bunch of different fiddlers and had them play a tune, and they would back them up for this. Was it Back Up and Push?
Yeah, that was it.
And so they asked me, and I was like, of course, yeah. And so we kind of met through that, and just a place called Fiddle Tunes in Port Townsend, Washington.
Weezer.
Portland Old Time Weezer, just lots of different old-time fiddle events. And then we kind of jived, and then they asked me to play on their record 2 records ago. And then I played on the most recent one, too. And, yeah, I love playing with them. It's just
We love Josh.
And do you get to travel as much as well, or you kind of end up being a kind of session guy?
I live in Wisconsin. I live in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I play music on the side now, but I used to be a full-time touring musician,
cool.
And now I sleep in my own bed every night. So it's kind of nice.
Well, tell me a little bit about this banjo making. So how did that end up being a passion of yours?
Oh, man, I started that company in 2002. It's a very long story. And I was in Arcata, California when I started that company, and I played banjo first and then got into making after I went back to school for cabinet making. And
And then at the same time not at the exact same time, but you and your life also hit upon this. How did it?
Well, I grew up playing music. I used to travel around with my family's country band, and I studied, I used to sing opera competitively and all this stuff. I didn't know
there was competitive opera.
Oh, man, it's a whole other weird
thing. I don't know if I want to go to that competition.
I bought my first banjo in a pawn shop when I was 16, and I'm really about the same level of proficiency on the banjo as I was when I bought it from the pawn shop, embarrassingly. But I've always loved it. My dad hacks away at it as well. And when Jason and I met in 2007, he was about 5 years into this banjo company that he had taken the plunge in 2002 and said goodbye to his day job and just went for it because he wanted to be self-employed and he wanted to build these beautiful instruments that he just had this natural eye into this very unique aesthetic and this unique tone, because he's both a player and a builder, so he can visualize what the tone is that he wants as a player and put that into the components that go in to make that banjo that sounds that certain way that's in his head.
Is there a style that you kind of are after? Are there different? I would imagine there's different kind of styles of banjos, right, and different periods of time and
style of banjo or playing. Yeah,
banjos when you're in making.
I'm kind of after this kind of low, dark, mid-range.
I mean, the one you're holding is beautiful. Did you make that one?
Yeah, right.
So it's beautiful, but also very, very understated, I would say.
I like beautiful woods and just nice hardware.
Right.
I mean, we make them where they're just covered in pearl. And Ferris is one of the best inlay artists out there, and she does all the inlay work for the company.
Wow, cool.
But for my own personal taste, I like like understated banjos.
Well, let's let you play a little.
Sure.
Do you mind playing one for us?
Yeah, we'd love
just
to.
Just tell, let us know which one you want to play and go for it.
Well, we're going to play this tune. Josh, where the heck did you get this tune anyway?
A gal named Sally Jablonski. And
well, that's an old tale there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Old Sally Jablonski.
I tell you what, back when I was a boy, no, I was probably at a jam. It was late night, and she was playing it, and she taught me so. And then this is the song that kind of started me playing with Jason Ferris.
Oh, cool.
It's the one we recorded on their record. They did a bunch of different fiddle.
What's
plays.
It called?
It's called Billy in the Low Ground, but it's not the one that you probably have.
No one's any.
All right. Yeah. The Sally Jablonski version.
Yeah.
All right.
Give me your A real quick.
To do this every year, and it's always so awesome. And these amazing musicians come in, and I get like it's a private audience of one. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
thank you so much. That's awesome. And it's so fun to watch how joyful that ends up being for you guys to play, right?
Yeah.
Music is just transporting to be able to play, right?
It is. And get those little moments that you hear each person giving out as you go, and, mm-hmm. and it's hard not to it's hard not to overly celebrate them because they're so excited
you have to concentrate, but also
disappear into almost like theta brain, you know, where you're off in another world where you just let the groove take over and enjoy what each person is pushing and pulling and giving and taking, and oh, it's great.
That must be something that for you, you know, you've played music your entire life, right?
Yeah.
You don't remember a time not playing music, sounds like, right?
Nope.
So for you, it's a form of language, or it's a form of expression that just is incredibly natural, right? When I said you have to concentrate, you probably don't have to concentrate.
That's my favorite moment is when I'm not thinking about it at all, and I'm just enjoying, I'm just fully in the moment.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's best when you just turn that off and you're just like, in the zone,
right?
Not thinking.
That's one of the best things about this old-time music. Like we're going to play a variety of stuff at the show tonight and the show on Sunday night as well. Original music that I've written and that Jason and I have written, and some old-time fiddle tunes as well. But with this old-time music, these songs, whether each person knows the same version or has played with each other before, you can sit down with a group of people
that you've never met and have never played music,
right.
And you sort of have this common language because you've spent time listening. It fills the similar place in your heart, so that when you get together, that groove just immediately gels.
I always think this type of music has a circular nature to it, right?
It
I
does.
Mean, there's this
sort of
and
its own tail a little bit.
Yeah, and so there's almost a mantra. Mm-hmm. It feels like almost a mantra thing going on there, right? Where it's a repetitive thing.
I think it's a spiritual communion, honestly.
It's interesting to see that. I don't play music, so I always just observe it and get to see that. And you feel that just as an observer as well. That kind of thing where you get lost in the moment.
Have you ever square danced?
I have square danced.
Oh, good man.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Talk about
dance.
Getting lost.
I mean, I'm not an idiot. I mean, I participate in the way I can, but I'm just not talented musically. When you were saying that, it made me wonder, do you feel that way when you're creating a banjo as well, that sort of lost in the moment? Are there times when you're doing that, or is that something where you have to...
I have to focus because I have a lot of machinery.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And I like my fingers.
But, sure.
But I do think a lot about banjo and the aesthetic and the tone that I want to hear, and I can build a banjo around an idea that I have. So,
yeah, building a banjo, I mean, there must be parts of it that are different than building a cabinet, right? I mean, as far as like when in the moment of doing it, you must be thinking about that end product maybe more so than when you're building something that is more of just a functional thing and not a piece of
yes.
art.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm thinking about just everything, the dimensions of all the pieces of wood I'm working with, and yeah. It's
How the wood is going to feel under your hands when it's finally shaped. We don't use any CNC machines or anything. We don't buy pre-cut necks or anything in our mm-hmm. workshop. So everything is done by hand. Jason is rasping a neck by hand and feeling that shape on it as he's finishing it and making that final decision that
right.
yes, it's done based on like the shape that he is hand rasped onto the neck.
Do you make custom ones for a particular person, like ahead of time, so that maybe you even have to think about sizing or those things for that person?
Basically, every one we make is a custom one for a person who's mm-hmm. been on our wait list for years now.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So, I do like 4 a month. Is kind of not. I don't have to work on weekends, and I'll contact them all and talk to them. Have long phone conversations. Most of our customers have never held one of our banjos in their hands. They're kind of buying it sight unseen mm-hmm. or heard. So it's a long conversation on the phone and that can figure out what we're going to make for them.
Yeah, very cool.
Each person has a different thing that they want from a banjo, whether it's like a slightly smaller neck because their hands are small, or they want it to have tons of sound out front but no sound out back, or whatever it is. Like they each have a small need that they want that's unique to that person.
And I'm trying to figure out what their idea of good banjo tone is, because I know what my idea is, so we're trying to communicate tone.
Right.
It's a pretty hard one.
And then how do you have this thriving business, and then you have to balance that with also maybe sometimes getting out on the road, sometimes
we
performing.
We also have two small children.
Oh, so.
4-year-old and 2-year-old.
So it's two.
And Josh has a 9-month-old daughter. So we are three parents without our children.
So that must have been affecting, I would think that affects your performance dates and stuff more than it might affect your, right?
We bring our kids on the road with us.
Yeah,
and
we bring them with.
We're always striking a balance between how much time we have. We know we need to spend in the banjo shop to build the banjos that we want to get out to customers that year
right.
versus time on the road versus that elusive thing called quiet free time. that we're striving to bring more. We're really striving to bring more of that into our
life. That's what college is for.
So this is,
learning
I mean, not being here without our kids is quite a remarkable experience. I mean, it's incredible that the Folk Fest has given us a gift of bringing us up here to be a part of this. We all feel so grateful right now.
Very cool.
So
we wanted to come up here and be focused.
Yes, that's good. So do you have time for one more? Or do you want to just get going, get on sound checks?
Probably play another tune.
Could you play one more? I've got you here. I've got the mics alive.
John Henry.
We haven't tried it yet.
John Henry coming up. All right. Jason and Ferris Romero, the Folk Fest guest artist. When are you guys playing? Are you playing tonight?
We're playing tonight. I believe our concert's at 8:30 tonight in the Centennial Hall, and then we're doing a dance tomorrow night.
Cool.
And we're going to have some incredibly special guests for that dance. Sammy Lind and Nadine Landry from the Foghorn String Band are going to come in and join us on
Very
bass and
cool.
fiddle. It's going to be a monster band with the great guest caller who's here for the weekend as well, Susan Michaels. And then we play concert on Sunday night as well.
All right. Wow.
We'll be around.
Full weekend.
Full, and we'll be out jamming our faces off and meeting people, and every single person we've met here is just
sounds awesome. And
amazing.
If you want to get on the 5-year waiting list for a banjo, these are the guys to talk to as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, man. All right. We're gonna say goodbye to you all with a little bit of John Henry. We're big fans of that early bluegrass sound from bands like the Lilly Brothers and old guys like that. And so this is one that sort of came from that feeling. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Jason and Ferris Romero with John Rabbi. Thanks so much for coming in to all of you. Really
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All
thank
right.
you so much, Andy.
Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. As the sun sets on a northern Midwest forest, we hear a most peculiar sound. It's an American woodcock aloft on a courtship flight. At sunset, the male woodcock walks slowly on short legs from the cover of the forest to a nearby clearing. After a few sharp calls, the woodcock takes flight. As it spirals upward, slim, stiff feathers at its wingtips create a curious twittering. At the apex of its flight, the woodcock circles, then descends in a slow spiral, putt-putting like a tiny car about to run out of gas. As it lands, we can see in the last light its beautifully patterned gray back and orange belly. The male will display at dawn and dusk for more than 2 months each spring. The woodcock's odd looks and sounds have earned it many colorful nicknames. The most memorable? Timberdoodle. Let's listen to the timberdoodle one more time. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
The Juneau Audubon Society will sponsor two 2018 cruises to Berners Bay this year on Saturday, April 28th at 8:30 and May 12th at 8:30. Stellar sea lions, harbor seals, bald eagles, humpback whales, and tens of thousands of gulls are just some of the species observed around this time each year. Vessels depart from Stouter Harbor, and Audubon members are on board to act as naturalist guides. Tickets for the four-hour cruise are available at Hearthside Books. Don't miss this year's Berners Bay Cruises, April 28th and May 12th.
And welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. Andy Klein with you. Paul Douglas, Mark Pusich have joined me in the studios. Thanks so much to both of you. Here to talk about the Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund. And Paul, how would you describe that fund?
Well, first of all, I guess I want to say that Mark and I aren't singers or dancers.
No, we didn't bring your instruments
in. We had a tough act to follow there.
Right. But we are celebrating. The Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund is celebrating this year our 25th year of making grants to nonprofit organizations within Southeast Alaska. We started, the foundation was formed in 1993, made a first grant in 1994. We've been at it for, we've made 24 years worth and are committed to trying to help out as best we can those organizations in Southeast Alaska that are interested in supporting the health, education, and welfare of individuals in Southeast.
So it's been going for that long. Right now process of helping many, many people, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Andy, it has. As Paul mentioned, it started in 1993, and I think there was one or two applicants then,
mm-hmm.
Paul.
That's right.
And it's grown now to over 50. Didn't we have over 50 one year?
Yeah,
so there's...
In total, over the entire history, we've made grants to 96 different nonprofit organizations.
And what sort of organizations does the fund target?
Well, there are those. I'll rattle off a few that have received multiple grants over the years: AEYC, AWARE, the Canvas, Discovery Southeast, JAM, Juneau Alaska Music Matters.
These are all the heavy hitters.
The heavy hitters.
Juneau nonprofits. Yeah.
Reach
yeah.
and Sale. Yes. And so, that'll give you a flavor of the kinds of organizations that people here are most familiar
yeah.
with.
Yeah. So if people are listening to this and say, that's an interesting fund, I wonder if my organization could qualify for that grant. How would they go about applying?
Well, they have to be a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
They can get an application through the Juneau Community Foundation website. JunoCF.org, and you look up the Douglas Dornan Fund, and there's more information about the history of the fund there, as well as application forms. You can call JCF and ask any questions you may have, or you can call me directly, 463-3042. Be happy to talk to you.
That's great. And we're a little short on time because we listen to that great band.
Yeah,
I'm sorry
absolutely.
To cut you short, and we'd love to invite you back to talk a little bit more about the history of it, but maybe just within the next 20 seconds or so we have left, a little bit about the flavor of the history and how this is something that's really helping shape what happens in Juneau.
Boy,
that's a big one.
Yeah,
that's a big question.
I think it's a lot about giving back, Andy, to the community and Southeast in general. And the applications we receive are very wide, broad. There are six trustees that are on the board, and we meet annually and we review all the applications. And we each individually kind of do independent criteria evaluation to determine, what is meeting the criteria of the grant the best? And there's some hard decisions and a lot of deliberation that's really fun, and it's great way to kind of collaborate on this giving back and the philanthropy that Paul has been so generous to do over these years. It's just remarkable. And I think we want to get the word out because
Great.
It's an opportunity for many nonprofits in our region and our community to be exposed to this. And hats off to this guy for being so generous.
Well, thanks to both of you for coming in again. Yeah. Sorry to shortchange you a little bit
That's
on the time.
Right. No problem.
We'll get back and get you back on the air here and talk a little bit more about it and some of the important work that's been happening as a result of this fund.
Yeah.
Once again, Paul Douglas, Mark Pusich, and that's the Douglas Dornan Foundation Fund. You can find out more by going to the Juno Community Foundation.
Deadline for this year's application is June 1.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Andy.